The tidal waves of protests and riots convulsing the capitals throughout the Arab world are heralding a seismic shift, an earthquake, changing world politics. With more than a million demonstrators on the streets of a single capital day after day, calling for the resignation of authoritarian leaders, dictators, some of whom have been in power for decades. This is all creating consternation, not only in the Middle East, but throughout the world. There are flashpoints all around the Middle East. Unrest, daily there are reports, violence, revolutions, fighting, and all started in January in Tunisia, in the center of North Africa, in a place that used to be called Carthage. Back in the Bible days, Carthage was one of the great sea powers in North Africa. And one of the great church fathers, Augustine of Hippo, wrote Confessions and City of God from the place that today is called Tunisia. Tunisia was the first Arab domino to fall. Tunisia has often been an exception. Tunisia was the very first Arab country to abolish slavery in 1848. That's 33 years after Europe. Europe abolished the slave trade in 1815. After the Germans and the British beat the French at the Battle of Waterloo, it was forced on all of Europe. Every country in Europe, with the exception of Portugal, signed the declaration abolishing the slave trade at the Congress of Vienna, 1815, almost 200 years ago. It took the Arabs 33 years before one country was willing to abolish slavery, but that was Tunisia. Tunisia is also the first Arab country to adopt a constitution in 1861. It's about 1,000 years later than Britain. England had its first constitution already back in the 9th century under King Alfred the Great. But Tunisia was the first Arab country to abolish polygamy, having many wives, in 1956. That's not that long ago. Now it's the first Arab country to remove a dictator without external help in 2011. There's another thing I should say about Tunisia, which I'm afraid is not a good thing at all. Tunisia, along with South Africa, are the only two countries in Africa that have legalized abortion in all cases. Shamefully so. Only South Africa and Tunisia are so un-African as to have legalized the killing of babies through abortion for any and all reasons. Tunisia has only had two presidents since its independence from France in 1956. Exploding public anger at blatant corruption and sharp rises in prices sparked the first protest in December. And in January, President Ben Bella fled to Saudi Arabia after 23 years of dictatorial rule. But as the interim government now consists of ex-ministers from the previous regime, and as the economic crisis which sparked the discontent in the first place remain, you can expect further instability. Although Tunisia has no history of Islamic fundamentalism, radical groups like the Muslim Brotherhood are attempting to exploit the instability and hijack the popular revolution to turn Tunisia from a mostly secular state to a radical Islamicist regime. This is the first revolution launched by Facebook, social media. And on the Facebook, you can see how people are saying, this is where we're going to gather, this is where the police roadblocks are, this is where we need to donate blood. There's snipers on the rooftops in this location, giving addresses, times, places. It was a revolution mobilized by social media, Facebook and Twitter. A lot of the demonstrators on the streets were proclaiming things that we would agree with. Protesting against corruption, protesting against dictatorships. Who can disagree with that? But the trouble is, mobs in the streets are easily hijacked, and it can easily be turned in another direction. Tanks are no good if the people are just climbing all over them. Tanks are meant to protect the soldiers, but if the soldiers are on the outside of the tanks, what's the protection? Absolutely pointless. The rioters have weapons, the army looks very passive. The media spoke about peaceful demonstrators, but firebombs are very dangerous. People throwing petrol bombs in a crowd, somebody is going to get burnt, hurt, even killed. Firebombs are very dangerous. There's a lot of damage that's been done. This doesn't look very peaceful to me. Rocks all over, people throwing rocks, firebombs, attacking passers-by. This motorbike has just hauled off his bike and beaten. A lot of violence has taken place. It's not exactly peaceful. Look at this man just behind the first one. Look at the crazed eyes and a rock in each hand. Do you really want your future to be decided by people running around the streets hurling rocks? Revolution. That's what the wall says. And a communist poster boy, Che Guevara's image up front. Well, it might have started secular, but the Muslim jihadists would like to hijack the demonstrations, and of course the communists always like to hijack demonstrations and turn the revolutionaries into their own people. When you get to a roadblock and the army or police are wearing uniforms, you may not feel too comfortable. But how would you like roadblocks where you've got thugs there, no uniforms, no discipline, they've got their baseball bats? Does this give you any more sense of security than if the army or police was running the roadblock? And then there's rioting and looting. Somebody's going to start looting. They call it affirmative shopping. Somebody decides to take the opportunity of instability to steal from other people's property and shops. Of course, in North Africa, they speak Arabic. But to be helpful, the demonstrators have their writings in English as well for the mob and for the media. And look at the amount of cameras here. And this man is plainly acting for the camera. You can see he's looking straight at the camera. And you've got all these cameras there. The police and the army are unable to do much when you've got all the world's media right on top of them, looking for any reaction, even when they are severely provoked. Here you have demonstrators tearing barricades to pieces, even in front of the police. The army is quite calm, but the people are the ones worked up. The police are trying to reason with the crowds, but it's very hard to reason with a mob. Game over. That's an American term. That's English. These people speak Arabic or French. But they have the posters done in English. Why? Because this is not a nationalist event. This is an internationalist event. And it's not for their own country's benefit. It's for the mass media, especially in Europe and America, that they're doing these things. Ben Bella, the dictator of Tunisia, is out. Who's next? This is not just nationalism. They're not only concerned for their country. There's other countries. One dictator down, all others to go. How convenient that translated the Arabic into English, that you can see it on the screen. Do you see how there's another agenda here? This isn't just spontaneous demonstrations on the streets. It might have started that way. But there's some powers behind manipulating these demonstrators. And it is like a domino. One domino down, all others to go. Revolution, says Time magazine. They say it as though that's a good thing. Actually, I cannot think of one revolution that's ever improved people's lives. I'm talking about political revolutions. We're not talking about the Industrial Revolution, the Agricultural Revolution. Those revolutions, of course, are positive. But when we talk about revolution in the sense of political violence, every revolution makes things worse, much, 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 much worse than it was before. The French Revolution is the prototype. They said that King Louis XVI was bad. He looked like an angel compared to Robespierre and the Reign of Terror that chopped 40,000 heads off on the guillotine in the name of liberty, equality, fraternity, or death. And had 300,000 others executed by firing squads and drowned. And then millions died in Napoleonic Wars that destroyed so much of Europe in 25 years. All in the name of liberty, equality, fraternity. The first revolution, the French Revolution, was a prototype for all others, and they've all been bad. The Russian Revolution, every revolution you can think of. The one in Mozambique under Samora Machel. The one in Ethiopia in 1974, and the Red Terror that followed that. Each revolution makes the situations much, much, much worse than it was before. Every dictator overthrown is replaced by another dictator much, much worse than the ones they've overthrown. The Shah of Iran replaced by the Ayatollah Khomeini, millions killed. And you can think of many other examples. So I'm concerned, and we should be concerned. What about Egypt? Maybe Tunisia doesn't concern you, but Egypt should. Egypt is a very important country. It's a country that often is referred to in the Bible. The relative political stability under President Hosni Mubarak for over 29 years came to an abrupt end this year. Mubarak's rule has been mostly secular and pragmatic. Yes, he's a Muslim. Yes, he prays towards Mecca. But his rule was mostly secular and pragmatic. He wasn't a Muslim ideologue. However, Islamicist groups have grown greatly in strength in the past 20 years, despite harsh suppression from Mubarak's government. And despite the ban on religious parties running in the parliamentary elections, the radical Muslim Brotherhood gained 20% of the elected parliament by running as independents. Mubarak's government brought that down to 10% by imprisoning many of their members. And plainly, the military in Egypt has been trying hard to keep the Islamic radicals out of power. Egypt is home to one of the most ancient civilizations in the world. Egypt is the most important Arab country. It has the largest population of any Arab country, 84 million. Islam is the state religion. However, you need to remember that there's over 10 million Christians in Egypt, mostly Coptic Orthodox, and they make up 12% of the population of Egypt. So when you think of Egypt, don't just think of Arabs. They are also the Copts, who are the original inhabitants of Egypt, and many of them are Christians. For over 1,000 years, Egypt was a majority Christian country, even after the Arab-Muslim conquests in AD 640. So for hundreds of years after the Muslims conquered Egypt and colonized it and started to force their language, Arabic, and force their culture upon the people, the bulk of the Egyptians remained Christian. So Egypt was a Christian majority population for 1,000 years, even though they're now down to only 11%. Incredibly, the Egyptian church has survived 14 centuries of Islamic discrimination and persecution, and they are standing firm to this day. A very resilient church. But violence against Christians in Egypt has escalated sharply over the last 10 years. Churches have been targeted for car bombings. Many Christians killed by violent attacks. An Islamicist takeover in Egypt would be a massive crisis because the country has so much influence in the peace process with the State of Israel. Egypt is America's key regional ally and the first Arab state to make peace with Israel. The vital Suez Canal is controlled by Egypt. This is the second most important waterway in the world for oil and other trade and traffic by sea. Second only after the Cape of Good Hope is the Suez Canal, linking the Indian Ocean with the Mediterranean. The British saw the value of this and they constructed, linking the Red Sea with the Mediterranean, a canal that enabled shipping to pass all the way from Indian Ocean to the Mediterranean and through to the Atlantic. And the Suez Canal is a very important naval choke point, vital for Europe's trade and oil, and massive amounts of essential supplies travels through this waterway. And Egypt controls it. Iran severed diplomatic ties with Egypt back in 1979 when the Muslim Islamicists took over Iran from the Shah of Iran because Cairo had a peace treaty with Israel. So they wouldn't talk to Egypt just because Egypt was talking to Israel. The Ayatollah Khomeini has compared the turmoil in Cairo to the period before the Iranian Islamic Revolution of 1979. The popular uprising in Egypt is being described by Iranians as an Islamist awakening, an Islamicist awakening, which could lead to the establishment of an Islamicist Middle East led by Iran, dedicated to the extermination of the State of Israel. along with this tidal wave of popular Islamic fanaticism on the streets of the Middle East, has come a sharp increase of violent persecution of Christian communities. Many hundreds of Christians have been wounded or killed in violent attacks on Christian churches and neighborhoods, especially in Iraq and in Egypt. Car bombs, attacks on churches like in Alexandria on New Year's Eve, burning of churches, especially in northern Nigeria, murdering and assassinating of Christians such as in Pakistan, Egyptian Christians, victims of recent violence against Christians. These are the pictures of some of the martyrs, Egyptian Copts, murdered in Egypt by the Arabs this year. Many, many of our brothers and sisters in Christ have been targeted and murdered. In Iraq, it's so bad that they are calling it the Iraqi Christian genocide, the genocide of Christians in Iraq. Tens of thousands of Christians are packing up and fleeing the region. Some estimates are that more than half of the total population of Christians in Iraq have fled the country. Now, considering that these Christians come from communities which have survived many centuries of Islamic persecution, only to be uprooted now, today, shows just how severe this new tidal wave of ruthless Islamic persecution has become. With the crisis escalating throughout the Arab world, Western governments are facing a conundrum of their own making. You see, for many years, Western governments and Western media have been repeating the liberal mantra that the vast majority of Muslims are moderate and against terrorism. It's the myth of the Muslim moderate majority. It goes like this. People are basically good. Islam's a peaceful and tolerant religion. And if that's so, then what's the solution? One party, one man, one vote, democracy will solve all the problems because all the Muslims are moderate and peaceful, right? And Islam is a peaceful religion, so obviously democracy is the solution. This is now being shown to be a self-deceiving fantasy. Surveys and opinion polls in Egypt have revealed that 59% of Muslim Egyptians back Islamicists, while only 27% back the modernizers. 50% of Egyptians support the radical Hamas terrorist group. 30% of Muslim Egyptians support the even more radical and violent Hezbollah. 20% support Al-Qaeda. 95% of Muslims in Egypt want greater Islamic influence in politics. Where are the moderate Muslim majority? The Muslim Brotherhood, which is a radical terrorist group that has killed a lot of people, including a prime minister and a president of Egypt. They are a banned organization, but the people are holding up their Muslim Brotherhood membership cards openly in Cairo today. The proposed solution by Western liberals to virtually any problem worldwide, that of ballot box democracy, is plainly not going to work in the Muslim Middle East. You see, real democracy needs a Christian consensus. It needs a society of people that believe in the great commandments of Christ to love God and to love our neighbor. But when you belong to a religion that teaches that the second most important command is to kill your neighbor, it's not going to quite be the same thing. When Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment, he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. When Muhammad was asked, he said, the second most important commandment is to participate in jihad, to kill your neighbor. It is not the same thing. Islam has never managed to produce democracy. The only democracies in the Muslim world have been enforced by American soldiers from the outside on unwilling Muslim populations. Democracy has not spontaneously come out of the Middle East or out of Muslim countries. Consider, after the American military succeeded in toppling Saddam Hussein's dictatorship in Iraq and making possible the first democratic elections in that country, the result was more radical Islamicists in power and far more persecution of Christians in Iraq than had ever been experienced before. In fact, this is the situation. Saddam Hussein's dictatorship was brutal and harsh, but Christians flourished in Saddam Hussein's dictatorship. There were 1.3 million Christians in Iraq under Saddam Hussein's dictatorship. Today there's less than 500,000 left. Over 800,000 Christians have fled from democratic Iraq. Saddam Hussein's dictatorship was more bearable than the democracy that has followed in Iraq. Can you imagine? Can you understand? This is an extraordinary situation. The instability that has come from having a Muslim democracy in Iraq cannot be exaggerated. The violence against Christians, the persecution of Christians, the machine gunning of churches. They had 70 Christians machine gunned to death in one church in Iraq just recently. In the year 2003, President George Bush said, "Are the peoples of the Middle East somehow beyond the reach of liberty? Are they alone never to know freedom?" That's a good question. The religion of Islam does seem to be diametrically opposed to the Western world's concept of freedom. Either Islam will die or freedom will die. The Islamic concept of freedom bears no resemblance to the Western understanding of freedom. What Islam defines as freedom, most Westerners would understand as slavery. In fact, that is exactly what Islamic scholars define freedom as. Ibn Arabi, a noted Islamic scholar, defined freedom as being perfect slavery to Allah. "Freedom go to hell," says this demonstrator. I think that summarizes the attitude of many Islamicists. The Muslim definition of freedom is submission to and subjection to Sharia law. You know what Sharia law is? Sharia law is a Muslim must always be in charge. No Muslim can ever work under a Christian supervision on any level of society, nowhere. No Muslim can be punished for killing a non-Muslim. No Muslim should be punished for killing a kafir, is Sharia law. No woman's testimony is valid in court against a man's. No non-Muslim's testimony is valid against a Muslim's. That is Sharia law. Under Sharia law, women who are victims of rape and reported are executed. The women are executed, not the rapist. The woman gets stoned to death, the woman gets shot in the head, the woman gets hung. The victim is always to blame, the man is always free, because the man's testimony always beats the woman's testimony under Sharia law. That is Sharia law. And the Muslims think that's freedom. Surveys have proved that 84% of Muslim Egyptians favor the death penalty for apostates. Now, that's not the death penalty for murder. Many of us would agree that the death penalty for murderers and rapists is appropriate. But this is the death penalty for religious freedom, for people exercising freedom of thought, freedom of movement, freedom of association, freedom to change their religious affiliations. 84% of Muslims in Egypt would like to hang a Muslim who chooses to become a Christian. Where is the moderate Muslim majority? They're busy burning effigies of their leaders in the streets and hanging effigies from their lampposts and their robots downtown in Cairo. 95% of Muslim Egyptians say they want Islam to play a major role in politics. 74% favor a strict enforcement of Sharia law. 67% of Egyptian Muslims favor a caliphate. That's a military dictatorship uniting all Muslims under Sharia law. The fact that 90% favor freedom of religion is not considered to be a contradiction in Muslim eyes. Because by freedom of religion, they mean submission to Islam. To Westerners, freedom means the exact opposite. Plainly, we are not talking the same language. Example, the London bombers. When the London bombings took place and the British people were shocked, they ran around, that's the TV media and radio, who are very liberal in Britain, BBC and so on, they said to the local imams, "Do you condemn this terrorism?" And I said, "We condemn all terrorism." Do you condemn suicide bombers? Suicide is un-Islamic. Excellent. They broadcast. But the print media in Britain is more conservative and critical, and they were not going for a quick soundbite from the local imam. They wanted to know more. So they were saying, are you saying you're condemning the terrorism of these London bombers who blew up pedestrians in the streets, blew up people in the tubes, in the underground trains, and in the buses? Oh no, they're freedom fighters, the same people said. But we thought you said you condemn terrorism. We do condemn terrorism. Is this not terrorism? No, this isn't terrorism. This is fighting for freedom. Oh. Well, what terrorism are you condemning? No, we're condemning the terrorism of the British Army and the American Army and the Israeli Army in the Middle East. Oh. We thought you said that suicide's un-Islamic. It is. So don't you condemn these people for being suicide bombers? No, they're not suicide bombers. Aren't they? They blew themselves up and killed a whole lot of other people. No, suicide, said the imam, is when you feel you have nothing to live for. And as an act of desperation, you take your life. This isn't suicide. These are people who've got everything to live for, but you sacrifice it for the good of Islam. These people are not suicides. They're mujahideen. So, you see, the TV media, who was happy with the soundbite, got the same imam to say, we condemn terrorism. Suicide is un-Islamic. But they're not talking about what you think they're talking about. When you question them further, you find out, no, but we're not condemning this terrorism, because this isn't terrorism. We're condemning what your army does in fighting our terrorists. That's terrorism. And our people aren't suicide bombers. They're mujahideen, holy warriors. You now have 70 virgins up in paradise with rivers of alcohol and all that stuff. We are not talking the same language as the Muslims. Islam does not recognize any other religion as valid. You see, to the Muslim, religion is Islam. All other religions are not real religions. Christianity is not a real religion. It's a false religion. So when they say we believe in freedom of religion, they mean freedom for Islam alone. Because only Islam is a true religion. So you say, do you believe in freedom of religion? And a Muslim says, of course, yes, we believe in freedom of religion. He doesn't mean freedom for you to practice your religion. He means freedom for him to practice his only. We're not talking the same language. The danger of the Radical Muslim Brotherhood, one of the most virulent Islamic terrorist organizations in the world, hijacking this popular revolution on the streets of Egypt to turn that country into an Iranian-style Islamicist state dedicated to the annihilation of the state of Israel and exporting radical Islam worldwide. This is a very clear and present danger. The Egyptian government leaders have publicly declared their astonishment at how the American President Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, is betraying them into the hands of the Radical Muslim Brotherhood. The Egyptian government is shocked that the Obama administration is openly advancing the agenda of the Muslim Brotherhood and walking for the downfall of the pro-Western Mubarak regime. Christians are calling out for help. Christians in Egypt need your help now. Christians never thought that Mubarak was their friend. He didn't prosecute Muslims who attacked Christians. But Mubarak did place army and police outside every Christian church in Egypt to protect them from attacks. So he may not have prosecuted Muslims who did attack Christians, but at least he was trying to prevent them. Probably not for good reasons. Maybe it was pragmatic reasons. Bad for tourism, bad for investment. We must placate the foreigners who don't like that. You have lots of Christians getting killed. Whatever his reason, the fact is at least he was trying to prevent the attacks on the churches. Whereas now, all the police and army have been removed from protecting Christians in Egypt. And they're more vulnerable than ever before to attack from radical Muslims. Mubarak has been a staunch American ally and the recipient of billions of dollars in military aid. His administration has long been considered the major stabilizing force in the volatile Arab world. But now you see Al Jazeera television broadcasting Obama's encouragement to the rioters and revolutionaries in the streets, set up even in the Tahrir Square for the people to see his encouragement with Arabic subtitles, conveniently. undermining the American ally of the government and supporting the revolutionaries committed to overthrowing them. Look at the amount of cameras in the foreground here. This is a media event. It's all for the cameras, it's all visual, it's all propaganda, as they pull down, deface this big banner picture of the president, Mubarak, in the streets, but you can see it's all being done for the cameras in the foreground. Observers are noticing that the Obama administration's support for the revolutionaries in the streets of Cairo is strikingly reminiscent of Jimmy Carter's betrayal of the American ally, the Shah of Iran, and support for the Islamic revolutionaries in 1979. Maybe you don't remember, let me refresh your memory. After the Second World War, there was great fears that the Russians were going to expand south through Persia, Iran, and get an ice-free port. One of the things the Russians have always wanted is a port that could be open in the winter in the Northern Hemisphere where they could have an ice-free port, because their ports all get frozen in and their ships can't sail out during the winter months. So they wanted an ice-free port, and Iran would be ideal. And so the Americans and the British put a lot of aid into the Shah of Iran's military to protect the underside of Asia from having the Soviets invade and take through Persia, Iran. And despite Iran being a steadfast American ally, in 1979, Jimmy Carter betrayed this ally and chased them out of office, did everything to undermine them, and brought this radical Islamicist regime, the Shah of Iran's enemy, the Ayatollah Khomeini, to power. And the Ayatollah took millions of people and poured them into war with Iraq, and they were killed by the millions. He got schools and primary schools to just march out in front to clear the minefields. Children would march by the tens of thousands and be blown up ahead of the army to prepare the way for the army to come. This was done by the Ayatollah Khomeini. They said the Shah was bad. Well, the Shah looked like an angel compared to the Ayatollah Khomeini who followed him. Of course, Jimmy Carter is the one who put Robert Mugabe in power in Zimbabwe and much, much more as well. All over the world, 14 American allies, pro-Western democracies, were betrayed into the hands of Marxist and Muslim revolutionaries in the time of Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was in power only 4 years, but during that time, 14 countries fell to radical dictatorships betrayed by the US State Department, such as in the case of Iran. Not one country fell to communism under Ronald Reagan's 8 years, and then they started to be freed, and he brought down the Iron Curtain and ended the Cold War. But what Jimmy Carter did to Iran, Barack Hussein Obama is doing to Egypt. Jimmy Carter had Iran, Obama has Egypt. This is a cartoon you see in the streets of Cairo. It's a Tutankhamun Sheikh of our lookalike, indicating the revolutionary spirit that is being engendered and promoted by the US State Department. Tahrir Square, the epicenter of the revolution in Egypt. The Iranian revolution in 1979 marked the birth of the modern Islamicist revolution, which has led to such a great instability in the world and much more aggressive Islamic expansionism. An Iranian cleric, Ahmad Khatami, on Iran's Radio Zamani declared, 31 years after the victory of the Islamic Republic, we are faced with the obvious facts that these movements are the aftershocks of the Islamic Revolution. The fate of those who challenge our religion is destruction. And this is what you're seeing on the streets. This is meant to be the moderate Muslim majority. These are meant to be some of the secular demonstrators. And what are they depicting? The Ayatollah Khomeini and his modern successor. These are the most radical Islamicist fundamentalist imaginable. The Iranian Navy has now visited through Suez. They're going through to Syria to assist them in trying to engender war with Israel. Ahmed Sayed, the leader of Jordan's Muslim Brotherhood, warned that the revolution in Egypt would spread across the Middle East until Arabs succeed in toppling all leaders allied with the United States and Europe. I think this is something that's important. What is going on in the Middle East? It's an Islamic revolution. It's an anti-Western revolution. That's first and foremost. Prominent Muslim clerics have issued fatwas and death threats encouraging the protesters in Egypt and claiming that the Islamic jihadists are now on the verge of a historic moment, an earthquake similar to the September 11th, 2001 attacks on Americans at the World Trade Center in Washington. It is very irresponsible to encourage rioters throwing rocks and petrol bombs in the streets that they are holy warriors who will go straight to paradise, who are doing something that is pleasing in the sight of God. That is very dangerous. The balance of power in the Middle East is about to be severely shaken and dramatically realigned. Tanks on the streets, but tanks aren't much good if people are able to sleep in front of them and look at the amount of people up on the flyovers. Tanks mobbed by the protesters. What good are these armored cars and tanks when you've got demonstrators by the hundreds standing all over them? In fact, many of the tanks have just ended up being another convenient place for them to spray paint their graffiti on. There is no fear for the military in Egypt because they know that the government ordered them to do no violence at all to them, to be so restrained. All that they are allowed to fire on these demonstrators is water cannon. And as you can see, the people are not fleeing from it. In fact, they're running towards it. It's not doing its job. Tear gas can easily be abused. Here these policemen shot tear gas into the crowd of rioters, but they didn't have gas masks. Well, the wind can change. And if you are a brave demonstrator and maybe wearing a mask or a wet handkerchief over your mouth, you might have a glove or a rag in your hand, you can pick up the tear gas canister early enough and throw it back, and now the police are weeping in their own tear gas. This man is well equipped as a rioter with protective gear, but without a gas mask, he's helpless, he said enough. This is the kind of scenes you see in Cairo. Masses and masses of people. And here you can see the phalanx of police and the trucks of water cannon. And this is downtown Cairo. Tear gas, water cannon, mobs, chaos. It's not going anywhere. In fact, the army are taking more casualties than the rioters. And plainly, the people are not afraid of the security forces. The rule of law is being undermined. There's a lack of respect for law and order. And with the White House openly giving support to the Muslim Brotherhood, Israel is preparing for the worst, as well they should. After years of enduring Iranian-supplied Qassam rocket attacks from Gaza, Israel now fears that their cities and their towns could be hit with the full brunt of the Iranian arsenal, as Iran could replace the United States as Egypt's main military supplier. Since 1978, the Camp David peace accord between Israel and Egypt, US taxpayers have provided $63 billion in aid to Egypt alone. That money is being flushed down the drain right now by Obama. The state of Israel fears that Egypt could become part of the Iranian pact in the Middle East, along with Hamas, Hezbollah, and other terrorist groups. A Muslim Brotherhood takeover in Egypt could herald the imposition of Sharia law, a drastic increase in persecution of Christians, and open hostility with the state of Israel. So what does Israel think about all this? The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu warned the Knesset that the future of Egypt and that of Egypt's ties with Israel hang in the balance. We have two separate worlds here, he said. Two worldviews, that of the free democratic world and that of the radical world. Which one of them will prevail in Egypt? The answer to this question is crucial to the future of Egypt, the future of the region, and to our own future here in Israel. Still quoting from Benjamin Netanyahu, the Iranian regime is not interested in seeing an Egypt that protects the rights of individuals, the rights of women, and the rights of minorities. They're not interested in an enlightened Egypt that embraces the 21st century. They want an Egypt that returns to the dark ages. They want an Egypt to become another Gaza, run by radical forces that oppose everything that the democratic world stands for. We oppose forces that seek to enforce a dark despotism, terrorism, and war. The Muslim Brotherhood seems poised to hijack the popular revolution in Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood's been responsible for the very high-profile assassination of President Anwar Sadat back in 1981. President Sadat was at a national event watching a march past of his army, and his soldiers opened fire and machine gunned the president and the whole presidential box in this most public assassination in our lifetimes. Why? Anwar Sadat had committed the unforgivable sin. He had made peace with Israel. The Muslim Brotherhood also gave birth to Hamas, Hezbollah, and Al-Qaeda terrorist movements. And Haman al-Zawahiri, the number two in Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden's deputy leader. He is Muslim Brotherhood. Al-Zawahiri grew up in the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and he was jailed for his involvement in the assassination of the president of Egypt, Anwar Sadat, in 1981. Nevertheless, despite the Muslim Brotherhood's radical statements and its incredibly bloody track record, numerous Western governments, especially the US State Department today, under Hillary Clinton, they have gone out of their way to claim that the Muslim Brotherhood is a force for moderation in Egypt, and neither violent nor extreme. If this is not violent and extreme, what is? Are the Americans out of their minds? The Muslim Brotherhood is a force for moderation? In what sense? The violence and the turmoil being engendered, the disrespect for authority, the ominous hangings from the lampposts in Cairo, well, that's Egypt. What about Yemen? Yemen is much in the news as well. Yemen is the poorest and least developed Arab country. It has a turbulent history of wars and revolutions and conquests. The north was part of the Ottoman Empire until 1918, then an isolated feudal theocracy until the 1962 Egyptians engineered revolution took place. Aden, the south, was ruled by Britain until independence in 1967, and then the north took control of the south. They united the two countries in 1990, and the north was the dominant partner. The South tried to secede in 1994. This led to a northern victory. But the current situation is fragile, low-intensity civil war, with the South still wanting to be free from the North. In Aden, you've got many different forces. The Southern secessionists, Maoists, Muslim radicals, Shiites, Sunnis, a whole lot. 86% of the 24 million population live in rural areas, and literacy is only 54%. The government of President Ali Abdullah Saleh has a reputation for extreme brutality over the last 20 years. Human rights groups document the frequent use of acid and electric shocks on prisoners and a culture of revenge killings. Yemen has become a training ground for Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda. The Islamist threat in Yemen is extremely high, with the potential for a descent into a Somali-type civil war. You have the secessionists, you have the Marxists, you've got the Shiites and the Sunnis. Yet Yemen dominates the mouth of the strategic sea route of the Red Sea and much of the shipping through the Suez Canal. As Egypt controls the northern part of the Suez Canal, Yemen controls the southern part. Islam is the state religion, of course, and the legal system is based on Sharia law. 66% of the population are Sunni and 34% are Shiite. This is the big divide in Islam. The Shiites are the Iranian type of terrorist group, and the Sunnis are the more majority Muslim denominational affiliation. There's no religious freedom in Yemen, although an expatriate working there on contract can practice his own faith as long as he doesn't attempt to evangelize any Muslim. So Yemen is heading to an extremely messy, multi-sided civil war. This ancient country, with its history of violence, is about to get more violent. And we need to be praying for the few Christians in this very volatile and dangerous situation. There is already outbreaks of violence, fighting, The country is very poor as it is. But you can see the Iranian colors. You see the Iranian flag's colors in this flower. Iranian Shiite revolution is already making its way known. Although they're also the Marxists. They're also the pro-dictator groups, the renter crowd. They're the Shiites. You can see them with their black clothing. And they're the secessionists, the Southern Aden supporters who want freedom for the South. So this is Yemen, a cocktail of violence and intolerance. One of the ways that an Easterner, an Asian, shows his contempt for someone is to show him the underside of the shoe. So that's a great sign of disrespect. The army trying to calm the situation, rioting and looting has taken place, and you cannot reason with a mob. There's a lot that's still going to be taking place in these areas, and you can expect more violence in the Middle East. Jordan was part of the Turkish Empire till 1918. Jordan was granted independence from Britain in 1946. Jordan is a constitutional monarchy with King Abdullah having executive powers. Jordan is considered to be a moderate Arab nation and a Western ally. Sunni Islam is the state religion, but there's some tolerance of established Christian churches. Jordan is sandwiched between Israel in the west, Syria in the north, Iraq in the east, and Saudi Arabia in the south. The desert country has no natural resources of its own, and it depends on American aid for its survival. But the prompt actions of King Abdullah of Jordan, dismissing his unpopular government, promising reforms, shows one way to deal with the tide of protests. Algeria is far more serious. Algeria was a colony of France for 132 years. After an extremely vicious civil war against France, Algeria was granted independence in 1962. Millions died in the war with France. A one-party socialist regime held power for 25 years under Ben Bella. I see you have a Ben Bella Avenue in Lusaka. Well, Ben Bella was as brutal, a sadistic, mass-murdering thug as you could ever imagine. Amazing that anybody would ever name a street after a man like Ben Bella. He totally destroyed his country. Economic failure and political abuses led to widespread protests, which led to the Islamicists winning the 1992 election. And at this, the army intervened to prevent the establishment of Sharia law. This is a strange thing. You'd think a military coup is bad, but in this case it was much better than the result of the democratic elections, which would have put radical Islamicists in power. And so, in a sense, in Algeria, one has to support the fact that the military had a coup, because the alternative would have been worse. There was a civil war that resulted in at least 100,000 deaths, some say 200,000. The current president is attempting to bring peace through a charter for peace and national reconciliation, and he's trying to accommodate the militant Islamicists to a dangerous decree, and this is leading to a lot of instability. It is feared that this appeasement of the Muslim radicals will be disastrous in the long run. Algeria's got a lot of oil, a lot of gas. It's close to Europe. Millions of its citizens are working in Europe, especially in France. The Algerian secret police have a brutal hold on power. After decades of posturing as the anti-Western champion of the Third World, the threat of homegrown Islamic fanaticism pushed the secular government closer to America and Europe, of whom they're trying to be allies at the moment. Algeria is home to many radical fundamentalist terrorist groups who have launched violent attacks on France, not with the support of the military government, but they are doing it nonetheless. If the grip of the secret police is weakened, a radical fundamentalist Islamic regime could seize power. As Tunisia borders Algeria, and as Tunisia is where the Arab Revolution began, the Algerians have also been protesting about their lack of jobs, the corruption, the inflation. The government responded by lowering some prices. Notice how the flags play a key role in the demonstrations. I think this is a tactic. You see, army and police are predisposed not to fire on people waving their own flags, because this is our flag. So even if you're trying to overthrow the country, the people waving the flag of the country It gives them an impression of being patriotic, even though they may be revolutionaries trying to destroy everything. So having the flags is actually a propaganda tool. And you can see it's actually being used to intimidate the police. Yes, this is their flag. This is Algeria. Shouts, protests, violence, burnings, attacks, conflicts with the police and the army, people being arrested, attacked. And notice again the convenient having not just Arabic script but English and French for the media, because that's the key thing. A rock in each hand hurtling towards the police. And this is the way mobs work the world over. You might have a good reason for the demonstration, but soon it can get out of control. What about Libya? Now this is another story. This is an exception. This does not fit the rest of the picture in the Middle East. Libya was ruled by Italy from 1911 to 1943. And Libya was granted independence as a monarchy in 1951. The military coup, which brought Muhammad Gaddafi, the Arab world's longest ruling dictator, to power. He has now been in power for 42 years. That's the longest ruling Arab dictator in the world. Sunni Islam is the state religion. Evangelism of Libyan citizens is illegal. But Christians are generally left alone unless they try to witness to Muslims. Meetings of more than six people is illegal. Now how's that? Six people is already illegal. Libya's economy was transformed by the discovery of oil in 1959. Oil accounts for 95% of the export income. They have not diversified at all. But very little of this wealth trickles down to the 6.5 million population. Very high unemployment, pervasive poverty would be the basis for any threat. But the country is run as a brutal military dictatorship. Get out of our life, we don't want you anymore. 42 years more than enough, says one demonstrator. Any dissidents are beaten or tortured or publicly hanged. Given Gaddafi's iron grip on power, it would seem unlikely that this popular revolution sweeping the Middle East could unsettle this brutal regime. But we could be wrong. All sorts of interesting things are happening at this moment. Gaddafi tries to portray himself as some popular African leader. But he is a brutal banana republic dictator. What kind of person wears a uniform like this? And who on earth earned those medals? Or what do these medals signify? This is the kind of mindless dictatorship that one can find in these kind of North African regimes. Ben Ali is out, Mubarak is out, Gaddafi is next, according to this poster. Free Libya, Gaddafi get out. Death toll in Gaza, people are listing the hundreds of people, in fact now it's thousands of people have been killed. Gaddafi has unleashed his own air force to bomb demonstrators. They have machine gunned, they have bombed, they have rocketed demonstrators in the streets. The 1st of the 9th, 1969 is when tyranny came to Libya, that's when Gaddafi took power. Gaddafi, the butcher of Libya, this is a demonstration outside the Libyan embassy in London. People of Libya, you're not alone. Now, we can only sympathize with the demonstrators trying to get rid of a brutal regime like Libya's regime in Gaddafi's regime in Libya. But there's another side to this. Here you've got pro-government protesters, rent a crowd. Here you've got anti-government demonstrators. One of the things that should concern us is while Gaddafi is a brutal terrorist-supporting mass-murdering dictator, the revolutionaries being supported by the West to overthrow him are in many cases Iranian-supported Shiites, who could be worse. So this is a difficult thing when you're talking about taking sides in the Middle East, because sometimes, even though the dictatorship is brutal, the ones who replace them are not necessarily an improvement. Not that one shouldn't resist, but we've got to be careful who we find ourselves supporting. A lot of destruction, a lot of damage. There have been cases where the army was ordered to go and bomb the people, where the Air Force literally ejected the seats, parachuted and fled and ditched a plane rather than bomb their own side. And there have been cases of the Libyan Air Force actually defecting. This is the son of Gaddafi, also very brutal. This is one of two MiGs of the Libyan Air Force that fled to neighboring Christian island of Malta and defected rather than fire on their own people. The Libyan border with Egypt, where many tens of thousands of refugees have fled. People taking off their shoes, hitting pictures of Gaddafi to show their disgust of this dictator. Morocco is another story. Morocco was independent from France since 1956. Morocco's got one of the oldest monarchies in the Middle East. The young king, Mohammed VI, has tried to present the image of a popular European-styled monarch. But he's such a control freak that he recently banned a magazine because it conducted an unauthorized opinion poll which merely confirmed how popular the king was. Islamic agitation in Morocco has escalated to terrorist bombings. There's a lot of demands on the street for the king to relinquish his autocratic powers. There are demonstrations, car bombs, violence. What about Bahrain? You may wonder, where's Bahrain? Bahrain is right here, in the Persian Gulf, south of Iran, north of Saudi Arabia. Bahrain is a very oil-rich little island country. Notice how the Shiite Muslims are 60% of the population, and the Sunnis only 25%. But the Sunni monarchy are very concerned, because the Shiite majority are trying to gain control with the support of the Iranian government. And this is quite serious. They are openly trying to get violence, and you can see they're wanting to provoke the government to causing casualties that they can report them. And even the funerals have been very violent. Many hundreds of people have been machine gunned and killed. And it is very dangerous because Iran is now threatening to invade Bahrain. The situation could escalate. Syria has serious violence at the moment. It's in the news. Syria is a very unusual Arab state. It has no oil. But it is strategically important. Damascus is known as the oldest continuously inhabited city in the world. So Damascus, where the Apostle Paul was en route to, or Saul of Tarsus when he was converted and became the Apostle Paul, he was on the road to Damascus, the oldest city in the world. Once part of the Ottoman Turkish Empire, Syria was granted independence from France in 1946. It suffered continuous upheavals until the 1970 coup, which brought internal stability under a military socialist dictatorship. Political expression in Libya, in Syria, is very limited. Since 1973, Syria has been deeply involved in Lebanon's conflicts, including military occupation, orchestrating assassinations of high-level Lebanese officials, and being a sponsor of the radical Hezbollah terrorist movement. Lebanon was the only country in the Middle East, the only Arab country that was ever a democracy. And that was because over 60% of Lebanon were Christians. It was a majority Christian Arab state. And so that was the one functioning democracy in the whole of the Middle East, out of 23 Arab countries. This was the only one that operated as a true democracy. Until the Syrians invaded, chased out so many of the Christians, killed so many Christians, more Christians fled, and the Christians now only 34% of the total population. The Muslims have become the majority. And so as Islam became the majority, democracy in Lebanon was extinguished. And the Syrians were the ones who achieved that. They extinguished Christian democracy in Lebanon. The Syrian government is a brutal, repressive police state, a steadfast opponent of the State of Israel. The regime justifies its dictatorship as a bastion of anti-Western Arab nationalism. While Islam is recognized as a religion of the majority, Syria is a secular state which accords a measure of religious freedom to the Christian minority, which is an incredibly large 6%. This is, again, the strange anomaly you see in the Middle East. Christians are given more freedom under dictatorships and monarchies in the Middle East, and they are given more persecution under Arab democracies of whatever flavor. Now violence is erupting, tanks are in the streets, Syria is heading towards civil war. That's another story. I've saved the worst for last. Saudi Arabia. This is the worst country in the world, according to Christian Freedom Analysis. Open Doors, Voice of the Martyrs, Freedom House, Heritage House, they all put Saudi Arabia at the very top of the list. When it comes to persecution, this is the most brutal anti-Christian regime on the planet. They always get 100 out of 100 for persecution. Worse even than North Korea, Red China, Cuba, Sudan, Saudi Arabia, worse than them all. Saudi Arabia is the richest Arab state, the richest Arab oil state, the most oppressive and brutal regime in the Arab world. No criticism of King Abdullah is allowed at all. Torture is widespread. Public executions are common. Even a prince or a princess, they have been executed. Princesses have had their heads chopped off in public for daring to become Christians. Saudi Arabia is an absolute monarchy with a semi-feudal state tightly controlled by a very large royal family. Saudi Arabia is the Islamic state committed to the role of custodian of Islam and of the holiest shrines in Mecca and Medina in Islam. It is Mecca that every Muslim must visit on the Hajj, the pilgrimage, at least once in a lifetime. This is the ultimate pyramid scheme. Islam is a financial pyramid scam. And those are who got in at the ground floor, Mecca, they get the economic investment of all Muslims around the world who must visit Mecca and support their various service industries. And every Muslim in the world must pray 5 times a day towards Mecca. And this is the focal point, the Kaaba, the rock in the box. This is where they are praying towards every day. And Medina, where the grave of Muhammad is. No church is allowed, no synagogue is allowed in all of Saudi Arabia. No Saudi Arabian citizen is allowed to be a Christian, not one. 15 of the 19 Al-Qaeda terrorists who carried out the September 11th terrorist attacks on America were Saudi Arabian citizens. Saudi Arabia is also home of Osama bin Laden. And Saudi Arabia is the focus of Al-Qaeda activity. Saudi Arabia's vast oil reserves, its strategic location, have made it a key American ally, or at least the Americans think they're an ally. It's also a huge purchase of British defense equipment. I don't know what the British and Americans are thinking. I wouldn't think that you can trust a country like Saudi Arabia as an ally. The House of Saud is too rich and too powerful to be easily swept away by the wildfire unrest which is sweeping the Middle East, but it is terrified by the developments, and who knows where this is going. To many Westerners who know little about Islam or the Middle East, the news of mass protests against dictatorships and calls for democracy would seem like a good development. Democracies are good, dictatorships are bad, corruption is bad. We sympathize with the people of the Middle East in opposing these brutal dictatorships, of course. It is a sign that Islam is a failure. Islam does not produce freedom. Islam does not produce democracy. All Islamic regimes are brutal and oppressive. So naturally we are sympathetic to those who want to overthrow them. However, in Arab countries where some form of democracy has been introduced, however tentatively, it's inevitably the radical Islamicists who come to power. Although Morocco is a monarchy, the parliament they have, with every election, the Islamicist radicals increase their holdings enormously. When elections were held in Gaza, the radical Islamic terrorist group Hamas received most of the votes. It is believed that the Muslim Brotherhood would receive most of the votes in Egypt if they had the opportunity. Those people who understand Islam and understand the Middle East are warning that democracy will bring change, but it would be in the form of the worst nightmare, an Islamicist crescent stretching from Pakistan east through to Morocco in the west. A pan-Arab caliphate where the word Islamicist would no longer be just shorthand for terrorist, but would describe official government policy, even in capitals such as Cairo. If European and American officials are worried about developments in the Middle East, you can only imagine what politicians and military commanders in the state of Israel are thinking. They are preparing for Armageddon. The news that you receive on a daily basis gives you some ideas, but it doesn't necessarily say why or where this is going. Soon it may not just be rocks that are flying in the air, but missiles. This is not a secular democratic revolution. This is a radical Islamic anti-Western revolution. If democracy comes to Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood may seize power, and they have made it clear that their very first action would be to tear up the 1979 Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty. That alone would hurtle this troubled, unstable region into more deadly instability and violence. The fundamental, irreconcilable differences between Israelis and Arabs means that any outbreak of conflict could easily embroil all neighboring states in a general Middle East-wide war. Many people feel that this war in the Middle East is inevitable. As Christians, we need to be praying through Operation World, the definitive prayer guide to every nation. We need to understand the Middle East. The birthplace of the Christian church is now the site of some of the worst persecution, the greatest violence in the world. Where the church has done the least, where there are the least amount of missionaries, you've got the most problems, the worst dictatorships, the highest human suffering index. But we need to particularly be focusing our prayers on our Christian communities in the Middle East. There are many dedicated Christians in the Middle East who are suffering, especially the Coptic Christians. And we need to be praying for fresh Christian missionary efforts to reach Muslims for Christ. We need to understand Islam, and we need to reach Muslims for Christ. The Bible says a lot about Egypt. Our spiritual ancestors came from slavery in Egypt. God worked many miracles to bring his people out of Egypt. Not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord Almighty. God has worked miracles in Egypt before. We can trust him to work miracles there again. We need to be praying for the Muslim world. Our churches should be focusing our prayers on this. We need to understand Islam. We need to be training our people to evangelize Muslims. This message, What is Going On in the Middle East, is available on audio CD. The book that I've written, Slavery, Terrorism, Islam, has gone through three, now four editions. We now have the fourth edition out. We've gone through already five printings this year. I did not realize we'd have our third edition ready just in time for this Middle East to explode. And the demand for this book is so great that we are quickly and continually running out of supplies. I got a death threat for writing this book. Muslims gave me a fatwa, judicial death threat, for daring to write a history book on the accuracy of what's going on in Islam. We've produced films, taken in film teams, produced great films on how to reach Muslims and what is going on in Sudan in particular.